Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper, Jumpin' James Herbert, and Bothersome Boogie Harper.
Both on the pod. Bothersome Boogie. He's really bothering you?
He's always bothering me. Unless he's asleep. He's the sweetest dog in the world, but he is a terror. He is an absolute terror.
He doesn't know anything about the world yet.
No, he's like a drunk eight-month-old child. Like, that's what he is.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot to deal with.
But he's great. We started on a Skype call, and I said that he'd been awake for, or he had been asleep for quite a while, so I didn't know how long this was lasting. Before we even started recording, he woke up and he went and peed, and now he's chewing on the stick next to me.
So if I
sound distracted in this podcast, it's because I'm trying to get him to chew on stuff that isn't the furniture.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that should be the goal in general,
right? That's always a good goal to have.
Yeah, don't chew on the furniture, everybody.
Right? Yeah, like if you're at home right now listening to podcasts, stop chewing on the furniture.
Yeah,
that would be my. Especially if you're at work, that could get you fired.
That could absolutely get you fired.
No, if you're chewing on the conference table, it's not going to look good for one, and two, that's just damaging property.
Yeah.
So yeah, if there's one thing you take away from your time listening to the Ion Basketball Podcast, it's don't chew on furniture.
No matter how tasty it might look.
Although, what if, like, you know how they made those candy necklaces?
Yeah.
So what if they did that with just like an end table?
Or like a throne.
Or a throne, right.
Yeah, like a throne made of candy.
With an end table next to it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in, but then like our advice means nothing then because you should absolutely eat that.
Right. So yeah, I guess there's a caveat to everything. Like, there's always going to be an exception to the rule.
If we've learned anything from these playoffs,
sometimes unexpected
things happen.
Yeah, and there's, you know, some would say there's some wild, wild stuff going on in the West.
And yeah, some wild, wild stuff.
And before we get into that, I watched Wild Wild West this morning for I don't even know how many times I've watched this movie.
Wait, no, I want to know. Like,
can we
ballpark it?
Over 20.
Really?
I mean, it's like a 20-year-old movie.
Yeah.
It's on...
So you have your once a year Wild Wild West day?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. What's today? April 29th?
Yeah.
Yeah, Wild Wild West day. April 29th every year. We should have an EOB pod Wild Wild West viewing. That's a great idea.
Whenever anyone mentions that movie, I just think... I don't know if you've seen like the Evening with Kevin Smith stuff where he talks about...
Yes.
Yeah. So where he talked about the giant spider.
Yeah.
That the producer wanted him to put in the, I think it was a Superman movie that he was writing.
Right. Yeah, he was doing the Nick Cage Superman movie.
Yeah, the Nick Cage one. And he was like, no, like, absolutely not, like, there's not going to be a giant spider in this movie. And then he watched Wild Wild West, and there was a giant mechanical spider.
Hey, you
and then he looks at the credits, and he sees that guy's name. And that's, like, the only time that I've thought about Wild Wild West since I saw it in theaters when it came out.
See, here's my argument. And I tried tweeting about this on... After I was done watching the movie, I actually think the premise of the movie is brilliant. Like, evil villain in the South in the 1800s tries to basically make a coalition, giving the United States of America back to Britain, back to Spain, back to Mexico, and then takes a piece for himself. Like, I think the premise of that is brilliant in terms of just like an evil plot line.
So what I was going to ask is, so where did it go wrong, though? But since you watch it once a year, maybe you think that it just didn't go wrong and it's an excellent film.
No, it's really bad. it's exceptionally bad. I just think, like, I mean, where it went wrong was everything after that premise.
Yeah.
You know, Will Smith turned down The Matrix in order to film this movie. That's another little bit of trivia that's out there. The acting, the writing, the execution of everything, it's all bad. But the premise is really good, so I wouldn't mind someone like trying to make a less cartoonish version of this.
Like a gritty reboot.
Right, a gritty reboot. Like, you know, he just made The Hateful Eight, so it's not going to work. But like Tarantino could have done something cool with that, I feel like.
The title's really good.
Wild Wild West is a great title.
If you just say, like... Will Smith in Wild Wild West. Like, I think that's why... Like, I think it did pretty well when it came out, right? Like,
yeah, I think it has.
I think it made money.
It's still making money. It's on TV all the time.
Yeah, which is so strange for a universally panned film.
Right. It's on HBO all the time. It's on like TNT and TBS all the time. Like this movie gets around. This movie is is not monogamous in any way.
No, absolutely not.
No, this movie has seen some things and been through some things.
What is your favorite moment of the film, and does it involve a giant mechanical spider?
Yeah, it's when they first see the mechanical spider. Like, I can't remember. Oh man, I can't remember who the president is, who the president's supposed to be. But when he's like, I don't know, like donating a railroad or naming a railroad or something like that, and they drive in the spike, and then all of a sudden it's like this pan out from them, and they're all shocked, and it shows like the spider leg, you know, step down. And so it's like, oh my God, how did look at this giant thing we have to deal with. But it's really like, from the distance they show, it couldn't have been more than like 400 feet away. So somehow this giant mechanical spider crept up on them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how that's possible. But the very existence of this giant mechanical spider in the Wild Wild West.
Structurally, required, it looks good.
Yeah.
Like their gears moving constantly. Like, I believe in the science of it.
You do? I was going to say that, like, the very existence of it required some degree of suspension of disbelief to begin with. But I don't know. Maybe it made sense by some weird logic. I don't know.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, they don't lie. That West is wild. I would even say wild, wild. And and it's just like this West is starting to get with the Curry injury and Spurs Thunder.
Yeah, I'd say this is at least a Wild West. I don't know if this West is a Wild Wild West. I guess that remains to be seen how things play out.
Yeah, there's one Wild in there for sure.
There's at least a Wild.
Depends on what happens with Blazers Warriors.
Yeah. Blazers Warriors, I mean, we're already killing off the Clippers. That's what we're doing.
I mean, I'm just trying to be realistic, you know?
I mean, I agree with you. I think the Blazers should be by far the favorite.
I thought they put up a great fight in game five and it still didn't matter because there was only so long that fight could be put up. Now, if they win game six, I'm not going to be shocked. I think they can do enough things to make it an ugly game and win an ugly game. But, I'm not hopeful for the Clippers.
What did Jamal Crawford shoot in that game? Like 6 for 19,
something like that, and he's been a good starter this year. It's a very small sample, but he had 5 games he started this year. He averaged 29 points on like 46, 45, 91, something like that.
So my thing is, like the only way they're going to win is if he plays a really efficient game.
Yeah, he's got to go off. Reddick's got to go off. Austin's got to have a really good game.
I think they also need Jeff Green to do what he did in the last game too, you can see. Speaking of wild, like, you can see wild variations in his game. And when he's aggressive and doing stuff in transition, then he can help you.
Yeah, and you need the playmaker. Yeah. You need the playmaker there to make DeAndre super effective in the pick and roll, right?
Right.
Like, someone's got to be capable of getting that ball to him to remind the defense of, like, oh, yeah, this guy still dunks on everybody.
That's got to be Pablo, right? Like, that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, it's got to be Pablo. Like, it's got to be Austin. It's got to be Jamal, too.
Yeah.
It really does. Well, since we're talking about them, what do you expect out of game six tonight?
I expect the Blazers to close it out.
Yeah. I mean, at home, all these injuries.
Yeah, and I don't think the Clippers are going to be lucky enough to have Damian Lillard as a non-factor for the first 3 quarters either.
Right.
Because he really only played one good quarter. Like 9 good minutes in that game because he sat for 3 minutes. I look at the talent disparity. I think the Blazers have the two most dangerous offensive players. I mean, the Blazers have the most two dangerous offensive players in the series, and then also they're deeper. And they were deeper even before.
Right.
Like, they were deeper before the Clippers lost their two best players. So it's possible that the Clippers could be better than they were in the last game, but I kind of expect Portland to be better than they were in the last game too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think they played a particularly good game and still walked away with a fairly comfortable win in the fourth quarter. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I also think from a selfish standpoint, it's worse for me if the Blazers win tonight. So I'm expecting that to happen. I'm not usually a pessimistic person, but I do in this case. I would like to spend more time with this terror, and the only way that happens is if Clippers force a game 7. Otherwise, I'm on a plane tomorrow, and I don't even have travel plans yet, so that's tough.
Yeah, so there could be some chaos for you.
Yeah, so tonight could be quite chaotic indeed.
Yeah, it's funny because like generally we don't root for specific outcomes. I mean, like I know you do like with the Wolves.
Even then, I just want to see good play. Like I don't even generally like, them winning or losing anymore doesn't do anything for me.
That could change in the coming years.
It could. Yeah, I guess if they become if they win a championship or 9 under Carl Anthony Towns, like I expect them to.
Yeah,
maybe that'll bring back some feelings. But yeah, it's funny like. The Wolves will lose, and people are like, oh, you must be hurt. I'm like, this team has killed me so many times over the last 26 years. Like,
yeah,
there's nothing they can do to hurt me anymore.
Yeah, no, exactly. But, okay, so we don't normally root for outcomes.
Right.
But when it comes to just, like, practical concerns and travel, then you start being, like, a crazy fan.
Right, yeah. Like, it's less convenient for me if the Blazers win tonight, because then I've got to turn around and get a flight within, you know, 12 hours or whatever. Well, I guess it doesn't have to be that quick, but I'd like to get it, you know, pretty quick so I can help out and watch games tomorrow night from my hotel.
And like any tortured fan, you've conditioned yourself to expect the worst at all times.
When it comes to travel, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not that, like, I don't even care. I don't care who wins the series. At this point, I'd probably rather the Blazers win the series from a matchup standpoint, covering, because I'll cover that series. I'll cover the Warriors next round. So I would rather see the Blazers win, but I would rather fly out on Monday.
Yeah.
So that's my own. For the people who care about my travel, my ideal travel plans, that's where I'm going.
No, you're
right
very
now.
Conflicted. I understand.
Yeah, so I am hoping for a Clippers win tonight, but I don't care if the Clippers win the series.
I gotcha.
That's what I would say.
Well, you're on Team Jamal.
Like, I am on Team Jamal.
It would be pretty crazy to see him just go off for like 40 or 50 in a playoff game.
It's just fun when he goes off.
Yeah.
I know some people don't like his game, but I just, when that dude is on, it's so fun to watch.
Yeah, because the shots that he takes, like when he has one of those nights, like the defense can't really do anything other than sending a bunch of doubles at him.
Right.
Because he's just going to drill between his legs and then like shoot a three over you.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's fun.
Yeah.
I like it when he's dancing around on him. All right, Spurs Thunder. Starts tomorrow, game 1, Saturday. I think the Spurs are going to win the series. Right? Could the Thunder actually do this?
I mean, they have the talent, but there's nothing that I've seen, like from the like sample size that we have of their seasons, that would lead me to believe that the Thunder are the better team. And I realize the better team doesn't always win in a 7-game series, but I'm like comfortably and confidently picking the Spurs to win.
Ooh.
And then I'm seeing other people, like, we don't have our predictions out yet, and I guess there's time for some of us to make changes.
I haven't even made them yet.
Yeah, but a couple of us at CBS Sports picked the Thunder to win, and I was just kind of like, I mean, my debate was like Spurs in 5 or Spurs in 6, and I went 6. But as much as I love, like, the high-end talent on the Thunder team, I don't think they're on the same level. I really don't.
Yeah, I mean, Matt tweeted out a couple of interesting stats to me. Is that one, against the Thunder this year, Kawhi Leonard was like a volume scorer.
Mm-hmm.
I think Matt said he took 22 shots per game against the Thunder and shot 50% from the field, and he's normally about like 14, 15 shots per game this year. The other one was, I can't find it, but it was something like Russell Westbrook is like 10% worse in the restricted area against the Spurs than he was in the regular season.
Yeah.
And so, like, they have Andre Roberson and they have Roberson or Roberson. I don't know what it is. They have Andre Roberson and they have Kevin Durant, and Kevin Durant can defend. So you can throw a lot at Kawhi throughout the game, but I don't really think they have a guy who's going to match up well with him. And on the flip side of that, if Westbrook struggles around the basket, I just think that's going to be really hard for the Thunder to overcome.
Yeah, I don't think Kawhi has to have a huge scoring series for the Spurs to win.
I don't either, but I think he will, and I don't think there's anything the Thunder can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, he probably will, but I'm saying if he does struggle, I don't think that's the end of the world for them. I think it's a bigger deal if Aldridge struggles. But the way the Spurs do things, I don't know, man. Like, I know we can think back to a few years ago, when the Thunder kind of shocked the world and beat the Spurs 4 games in a row after they lost the first two. But I just don't see this as the same team. I don't think they're nearly as good defensively. I don't think they have the same amount of weapons offensively in terms of different guys that can create beyond KD and Russ. I think there are things the Thunder can do to make it more competitive. Like, I'd love to see Campaign play a bigger role.
I just don't think he will.
Yeah, but I don't know that that's what Donovan has planned. And the coaching matchup is part of this. And like, I don't think it's insulting to Billy Donovan at all to say that the Spurs have a huge coaching advantage in this series. It's Greg Popovich with a bunch of guys who have played for him for a long time against this Billy Donovan coached Thunder team that took a big step back on defense and has been terrible in the fourth quarter all season.
Right. Yeah. And I guess my concerns here are, can we get anything close to the Deion Waiters and Enes Kanter we saw at the end of that first round series?
No.
Against the Spurs. Like,
I don't think so.
I don't think Deion's going to score against, you know, Manu and Danny Green, and I don't think Kawhi will ever be on him on purpose, but like I don't see that happening. I don't, like, Enes was really bad even in the wins this year. I don't know if it's fair to say Enes was bad, but the Spurs were dominant with Enes on the floor.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it is just regular season. I kind of dismiss that all the time, but that's been my concern with the whole Kanter in the playoffs thing anyway, is how much can you play him? Like, was he really that good last series because he was that good, or was he really that good because it was David Lee? And Salah Mejri, you know, no offense to Salah Mejri, but, you know, he can be a shot-blocking presence, but I don't think he's that good defensively yet.
And Kanter was really good in that series.
It was great, and yeah. He shredded them the last couple games of that series.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with acknowledging that and also being, you know, doubtful about how he'll do that against the Spurs, because I just don't really see it. I can see him getting a lot of putbacks, getting offensive rebounds, like he does against most teams, but I don't think he's going to have those huge offensive nights. I don't think he's going to dominate the glass against a team like this. It's just, you didn't see a lot of players do it to San Antonio throughout the regular season, so I don't expect Kanter to come off the bench and do that to them.
Yeah, so I guess the question there is, you know, who on the Spurs could he do that to? Like, I guess whom could he do that to on the Spurs? Is it like David West? Can he outplay David West? I think this year's David West, like, I think that's a fair enough question. Like, I think he could do some things against this David West.
Maybe, but I don't know that. It, like, who's West playing next to? Like, is West at the five, or is West playing next to Dio, or is he playing next to LaMarcus, or playing next to Duncan?
Yeah,
like, I don't think it's going to be just Kanter versus West. And I mean, if Kanter's really a problem on the glass, this person just put it Boban, and
right.
That changes things a little bit.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, they can do a lot of adjustments there. Yeah. Like, I don't like the matchup against Boris. I don't like the matchup against LMA or Duncan, obviously. I want, like, how much can we see Boban in the series? Because he doesn't actually play all that much, but he seems crazy effective when he is. And I don't know if that's just garbage time or if he's really going to be effective. Like, can he be a real weapon?
I am pro Boban.
Well, yeah, me too.
And I am pro Boban, as you know. Look, they obviously give something up in terms of speed, and the Thunder can try to push the ball when he's in there. But I do think it's worth a shot. He's just such a force when it comes to rebounding, and he has a really good touch around the rim, and he's actually a pretty good passer. He has a good feel for the game, and
yeah,
I think he's sort of their secret weapon that they'll go to if they need to, whether it's in this series or maybe in the conference finals. I expect to see him out there at some point, despite the fact that he didn't see that much time in the regular season.
I'm curious what the pace and the tempo of this series is going to be. Obviously the Spurs like it pretty slow. The Thunder are going to want to push. I don't know though, maybe this sounds dumb, but I don't know that the Thunder pushing against the Spurs team is going to make them that uncomfortable. Obviously, if it's like Westbrook out in transition, that's a murder factory. But other than that, I think the Spurs can kind of keep up with them.
Yeah, I think the Spurs are capable of playing it at any pace. I think they just, the way they're kind of structured this year, it made sense for them to play slower.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that stat will be talked about a lot in all of the previews and even throughout the series.
Okay, so we've had some technical difficulties with internet connection, so now I'm calling you on your cell phone.
Yeah.
So that's why it's going to sound different from here on out on the podcast.
I apologize.
No, it's
blame
not
blame Rogers Cable.
Yeah, I definitely blame Rogers. Don't they have like a whole tower and everything?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. They should have enough bandwidth to equip our conversation.
Yeah. I don't know what's up. Maybe it's something I did. Maybe I'm being very unfair to Rogers, but I do need to call them after I get off the phone with you.
No, I think you absolutely need to call them. And I think we demand that they respect, you know, what we're doing here at the Iron Basketball Podcast.
Yeah, who wouldn't respect it?
Yeah, you would have to. I mean, we talked about...
Whom wouldn't respect it, even?
No, I don't think that's right.
No, let's just go with him.
Okay.
It's always him.
No, that's not exactly the rule.
No, the rule is always him.
Yeah, we talked about Wild Wild West and my dog, who, by the way, is a nightmare at the moment. I'm holding him. I have a chew toy in my hand. I'm trying to distract him as much as I can without him going off and chewing something.
Wow.
It's a lot like trying to wrangle Russell Westbrook within the half court, which is going to be a struggle for the Spurs. Matt brought up a really good point in his preview, of basically like, well, Kawhi can't guard both these guys, so someone's got to bring it. Well, I don't think so. Like,
are you going to doubt him?
Danny Green will, I'm assume, spend some time on him, and you kind of hide Parker on Roberson or even Morrow if he's in the game, or whatever. But for the most part, like, you know, Danny Green has his work cut out for him, and obviously there's a team defense, and especially against Russ, it's always a team defense. But how those two superstars are corralled is going to be interesting.
Two superstars.
Well, Durant and Westbrook, not Danny Green.
I'm just saying, Mark Cuban has a bone to pick with you.
I think Mark Cuban knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He knew that his team didn't really have a shot, so he tried to force Russell Westbrook to have a me game instead of a we game. I think that's.
I think
what happened.
He was
I think Jason Terry did all that guaranteeing, knowing that it would be bulletin board material for the Warriors and they would get shredded.
Because he just wanted the season to be over.
He wanted to be done with these guys.
You see Draymond Green's quote after that? He was like, full respect to Jason Terry, but after you guarantee a win, you can't go out there and go 0-7.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No, he's definitely not wrong.
So, all right, so your prediction for Spurs Thunder is Spurs in six.
I did six.
What percent chance do you give the Thunder of winning the series? Let's put a random percentage on it that doesn't actually mean anything.
I don't know, like 25%.
Ooh, I feel like that's low.
Like that's low?
I feel like that's low.
I'm lower on them than I think a lot of people are. And it's not because I don't believe in the superstars, not because I don't believe in guys like, you know, Ibaka and Steven Adams. Like, I think they have a really solid starting five against the Spurs, but
sure.
I don't know about the bench. I think you're asking a lot of Waiters and Cantor, and I just think the Spurs have more options. They can. We talk about adjustments in these series so often, and we don't know how the series is going to play out. Like, we don't know what adjustments Pop and Donovan are going to have to make, but I think what we do know going in is there are just more moves that the Spurs can make.
Right.
They have more pieces, and those pieces, most of them can play both ends of the court. So there's just way more versatility there, and that's why, to me, I look at this matchup, and I'm like, the Spurs are the obvious favorite. Now, crazy things can happen in playoff series, and Durant and Westbrook are both capable of essentially winning close games on their own, but I would say the track record of this team in clutch situations this season,
it's not great,
does bother me, because as soon as I start thinking, well, you know, if it's close and at the end of the game the Spurs can't stop Durant or can't stop Westbrook, then the Thunder could pull a couple of those out, I think, well, they haven't done that.
Yeah, and the Thunder's late game defense is horrendous. I mean, that's kind of been the bigger problem to me this year with their late game stuff, is that the defense is so bad that it puts more pressure on the offense.
And, you know, that's where I wonder, like, could Donovan put his defensive unit actually in there at the end of the game? They did that, I think, in the last game against Dallas.
Right.
But that's generally not his move.
Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, that he definitely could do more of that cross matching stuff. That, you know,
well, because normally, like, Waiters and Cantor are playing at the end of the game.
Right.
He doesn't have to do that.
No. No, I mean, I think Steven Adams, yeah, like, I may be crazy on Steven Adams. I think he's an exceptional big man. And I think that he's underutilized. And I get why he's underutilized for that team. But I just think he can be trusted way more than he is.
And yeah, I think he has more offensive skills than people give him credit for.
Yeah, I think he's really skilled offensively. Like, I don't see any reason, other than obviously, like, experience, I don't see why he can't be their Bogut.
Yeah, I think one day he'll be kind of more like that. I think he's already on his way.
Yeah.
But I think Bogut is like his mind is just like he's like Duncan like in terms of his defensive like anticipation and timing and all that. And right. I wouldn't say Adams is there yet, but he's really not. Good.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, like even just like used as a passer, I think he could be a great passer for them out of the high post and stuff. But yeah. So I would say I'll either go Spurs in six or Spurs in seven, but I think, like, I would give the Thunder, like, 45% chance of winning the series.
Okay.
That's pretty good. I think it's pretty close. I just think it's pretty close to even. I still think this Thunder team is just damn good.
Here's the thing. Like, I feel like I'm sort of sounding like a jerk when I'm saying the Thunder aren't on the Spurs level, but, like, San Antonio is one of the best teams that we've seen in a long, long time.
Right. No, I agree.
Like, their
with that.
Defense is the best in decades. Their offense is still incredible. And I'm just, it's really to me, like, I think the Spurs and Warriors are closer than the Spurs and Thunder are, if that makes sense.
Right. No, I agree with that. I think that's fair.
Like, I think the Spurs are, they're just head and shoulders above everybody in the league besides the Warriors. And if we were doing a Spurs-Cavs preview rather than a Spurs-Thunder preview, I think I'd sound pretty similar with everything that I'd be saying about the Cavs and saying about the Thunder. Like, Thunder are a great team, but the Spurs are even better than your normal great team.
Right.
And I think this is just sort of bad timing for Oklahoma City where they're going to run into this group in the second round rather than in the conference finals.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, let's go to one that we really don't agree on, is Cavs-Hawks. So
you don't like the Hawks. You don't trust the Hawks, famously.
Right. I don't trust the Hawks. I still don't trust the Hawks. You think that this is going to be a long series and that the Hawks, like, you've struggled to not pick the Hawks, right?
Is that fair? I wanted to be bold and predict an upset. I couldn't bring myself to do it. But I ended up going Cavs in seven, which I think is still probably going to be seen as kind of bold.
See, I think it will too, because I'm having a hard time giving the Hawks a game. I'll probably cop out.
Even one game?
Yeah, I'll probably cop out and go Cavs in five by the time I make my prediction, just to avoid, like, the Hawks surprise them in game one, and then it's like, oh, what about now? I thought they were going to sweep, you know, so I'll just hedge against the tweets. But I just think, like, I respect this Hawks team. I think they're awesome defensively. Paul Millsap's really good. Al Horford's really good. Jeff Teague was really good last year. I think, Korver can be dangerous. And I just look at this Cavs team, I'm just like, for all the faults this Cavs team has, and I know it's not great to make these comparisons from last year to this year, because there's a lot of different context for last year and this year. But a better Hawks team, granted a more injured Hawks team, but a better Hawks team last year, you know, couldn't beat this Cavs team once. And I kind of think this Cavs team's, in a weird way, I think they're better than they were last year, and I think this Hawks team's a little worse, and because of that, like, I'm having a hard time thinking the Hawks are going to put up a great fight, because I don't think the Hawks can score in this series, and I know, and okay, as good as the Hawks are defensively, I know the Cavs will score.
Okay, here's my argument for the Hawks pushing the Cavs in this series. One is the Pistons didn't win a game, but they were really close for a lot of that series. And I think the Hawks will sort of, I think the reason why the Pistons were successful offensively was because they spread the floor and they just played really, really hard. And I think the Hawks are going to do a kind of similar thing, but they have better players. and their defense is way better than Detroit's is. And when I look at last year, like, yeah, that matters. But I don't think we saw the real Hawks in that playoff series. I don't think that was reflective.
That's a very fair point.
Like, I mean, maybe this is just, like, I felt dumb after that series because I predicted the Hawks would win. And then they got swept. And maybe I'm just trying to hang on to what I saw in them before. But I remember going into that series and thinking, like, okay, this is, like, the profile of a team that would beat the Cavs, is a team that passes the ball so well, that plays really solid, smart defense, and that can just hit a bunch of threes. And I thought that was kind of the way you should try to beat this team. And they just didn't do it. They missed a ton of open looks, and most of their best players were hurt, though.
Yeah.
And I don't think that series would have been the same if you had a healthy Millsap, Carroll, and Korver for the whole time, and they were playing like they were in the regular season. And I say that while acknowledging that it's harder to play like they did in the regular season.
Sure.
In a playoff series where the opponent can zero in on someone like Korver and just be like, we're going to do everything we can to not let him get free. Like, I get that. But, yeah, I think they're less talented this year because Carroll's gone. Bazemore's had a great year, though, and I do think as a team, they've gotten better defensively, and I think that mattered. I'd feel a lot better about the Hawks if they had Tiago Splitter healthy, and they don't, and that means you're probably going to see, like, Chris Humphreys in the rotation unless they go with a really short one. I think what I'm hoping for is a long and competitive series. I think the Hawks can really push Cleveland, and I think it'll be closer than you think it'll be, but I can't in good conscience be like, yeah, I think the Hawks will win because the Cavs are obviously the more talented team, and the Hawks just seem to continually let us down with the way they create all these open shots, and then they just seem to miss them.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I feel about the Hawks and what I'm saying, I think, are completely different, because I feel like I'm not showing a ton of respect to the Hawks in what I'm saying, and I do think this Hawks team is really good, and I do respect them. I think my biggest problem is I'm not a huge Jeff Teague guy. And so, like, when he looks, like, definitively worse to me this year than he did last year, I'm just not sure how much I believe in that part of the attack. And I think that part of the attack is really important. Now, maybe Dennis Schroeder makes up for that because I don't know why. I don't know why he would, but maybe he does. Like, maybe Dennis Schroeder can come in and be a spark plug because of the way he can attack off the dribble and all that stuff. But yeah, like, I just look at it and I just think, even if this gets into a late game situation, man, I know what the Cavs are going to do. I don't know what the Hawks are going to do. And some people think that's a good thing, and I don't. I think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, and we've had this conversation before where, you know, you'd prefer the Hawks just had, like, one superstar that can get them a bucket when they need it. But, like, I think Millsap is, like, close to superstardom. And
yeah, he's really good.
Probably is a superstar, even though people don't think of him as one. Like, I think with those two guys, I'm pretty confident they can get a bucket. And the other thing with Teague is, like, Teague has not had an all-star season like he did last year, obviously. But in a matchup with Kyrie Irving, like, I think he can really take Kyrie off the dribble and make him work on defense. And I think that's a problem for the Cavaliers. Like, I could see Jeff Teague having a really good series, and I could see them trying to find more minutes for, like, Delly to end up guarding him. Like, I could see him, even though he hasn't been an all-star this year, I could see him looking like one in this matchup.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, again, I'm not a huge Teague guy, so.
I'm not a huge Kyrie guy when it comes to his defense, so that kind of makes me think, like,
yeah, that's true.
This could be the series for Teague. I don't know. It's interesting because last year this was just framed a lot differently.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people were really excited about it. It wasn't crazy to predict the Hawks win. And the two teams are pretty similar in terms of, like, the way they're constructed compared to last year. I mean, Love was hurt for that series.
Right.
So the Cavs are different. But it's being looked at as this foregone conclusion that the Cavs are going to have their way with them. And I wasn't, like, that impressed with how they played against the Pistons anyway. So that's why I'm I'm predicting that it will go long, but I will admit I'm nervous about it.
Yeah, see, I thought the Cavs scheme against the Pistons was great, and I thought the Pistons just made shots that they don't normally make. I also think Reggie Jackson's a lot better than Jeff Teague in terms of how he attacks.
Yeah.
And so for me, like I look at that Pistons series and go, well, yeah, of course they were that competitive. Like Reggie Jackson attacked pretty well for the most part. Whether he made shots or not, I like the process of it. And I don't know that I expect Teague to do that. But so you've got Cavs in seven. I've got Cavs in – I'll go Cavs in five. I'll give the Hawks
one.
And I'm sure they're thrilled about that because that matters if I'll give them a game. I'm sure that's really upsetting to them. Okay, so
Hawks push this to seven or they win, we need somebody to Photoshop like Kent Bazemore doing the Baze gaze over your shoulder.
Over my shoulder with like the crying Jordan meme on my face.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the move. All right, we've got two more to talk about. We already gave our prediction for Clippers Blazers. We both think the Blazers win tonight. Raptors Pacers? Raptors can close out? Do they close out?
I don't know, man. The last time we talked was like right before one of the craziest games I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I feel really good about the conversation we had because what we were both kind of saying was like, the Raptors should probably win, but who the hell knows what to expect from this team? And then we saw the worst and best of them in the course of one game. And there was such great extremes going both directions because the way Toronto started, it was kind of shocking to me, the way they played for the first three quarters. And then in the fourth, it was just like, wow, like where the hell did that come from? So I don't know how to predict what this team is going to do. Just like I said the last time we talked, but I'll say the same thing I did before. Like they're the more talented team, and I think they really don't want to have to deal with a game seven situation, and I think they'll come out with the proper attitude. And if it gets close in the end, it's sort of like last time. Like the Pacers, they don't have as many options. They're more likely to be tired. They're more likely to rely on one guy, whereas the Raptors have a whole team. And that's why I'll take Toronto. But I mean, I also saw Paul George look like a top five player in the last game. He was unreal. Just incredible. And he seems to rise to the occasion in situations like this, so I'm sure he'll have a monster night at home when the team is in a must-win situation.
It's crazy. In that game, like, whatever, it's a small sample and it's plus-minus, but through the first three quarters of game five, Paul George was a plus 25, which is just, like, that shows you how crazy that game was. Plus 25, and they ended up losing.
They couldn't do anything when he wasn't on the court.
Yeah, they really couldn't.
Like, it was a disaster. Like Rodney Stuckey was like passing the ball into the stands, falling out of bounds into Drake. Basically,
those were better options than him shooting the ball. Like that's how bad he was.
Like you couldn't help but feel bad for him when you were watching. It was just like what a time to have like the worst game of your career, basically. And he's been bad all series, and that bench has been bad all series. But it was just incredible how they fell apart. Immediately when Paul George went to the bench at the start of the second quarter and at the start of the fourth quarter. And that's why the storyline going into this game six is, can Paul George play a full 48? And he was like, yeah, I can if they need me to. I don't anticipate that he will, but I do think you might see a different rotation. So, like, maybe this time Frank Vogel won't start the second quarter with him and Ellis and George Hill all on the bench because that's been a disaster all series long.
Yeah. Okay, here's my prediction, and there's no way this backfires. 150% guarantee this series is over tonight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where does your confidence come from?
I don't know. Drake just put out an album, so there's probably some cosmic tie-in there, right? I haven't listened to it. I don't know if it's any good. I'm not a huge Drake fan in the first place, but yeah, I don't know. Some people seem to like it. So the Raptors are Drake fans.
I wonder if he'll be there.
I'm sure. Well, I don't know. Will he go to Indiana?
I don't know if he's in Indiana or not.
Yeah. I like that Bankers Life Fieldhouse arena. I got to go there a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's a cool arena. I like it.
Yeah.
I like the feel of it. All right, and then last game that we got to go over, Heat Hornets. The Hornets come back amid referee controversy. and we find and we find them with a 3-2 lead going into Charlotte. Do the Hornets end the series tonight?
Man, I mean, the closeout game at home, so you want to go with the home team.
Yeah.
But the last two games, it's been so close.
I have no feel for the series at all. I have absolutely no feel.
Me either.
I've watched a lot of it almost twice, let alone just once. And I have no idea what to expect. But I will say this. 120% chance we see a game 7. I have nothing to base that off of either. Oh, you know, here's why. Drake just put out a new album. He loves the city of Miami.
Yeah, totally.
It's Drake Day, so that's why I'm gonna go with this. No, but I have no idea what to expect.
Everything about this series screams 7 games. Like, they're just so evenly matched. The same record the regular season. The last two games have come down to the wire. It's just been really close, aside from those games where Miami just made every shot that they took. So because of that, I'm picking it ends in 6 games, because everything that happens is... I just think I don't know how to phrase this correctly. Everything points to a game 7, so I'm going to go and say that it ends in game 6.
Oh, so that would actually...
The playoffs seem counterintuitive.
That's rooting for chaos. Is that is because everything seems normal that it would go to a game 7. The chaos would be ending in 6, and then it's what has happened to the Miami Heat.
And exactly. It's like, how did you lose 4 games in a row to this team where Batum was out and then limited?
Yeah.
And basically, where does this team go? How does Bosch fit in? Like, blah, 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 blah. It would be chaos.
All right. I like that. I'm still going with my 120% or whatever I said chance of it going to game 7.
I think I won a game 7.
But again, predictions are meaningless. Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I don't get a pay raise if my predictions are correctly.
No, that would be crazy.
Although I would try a lot harder at the predictions if that's what happened. I would really study this thing.
you would get really crazy. You'd have your own statistical model.
Oh yeah.
That you would use. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, James, Enjoy the Raptors game. Enjoy the Heat game. Enjoy the Clippers game. And
I bet I will enjoy 2 of the 3.
Okay, maybe that last game's not going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. And, maybe the first game won't be great. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, all of these could really suck tonight. They all have heavy implications, but they could all suck tonight. They also could all end the series tonight. So maybe we'll get a shorter first round.
Maybe.
All right. Thanks, James.
Thank you, Zach.